Back together again with you, getting together, kicking off a brand new year of Connecticut Today. On Friday, January 2nd, 2026, we chatted with former Fairfield Republican State Senate member John McKinney about the 2026 Connecticut governor's race and races, too, in the General Assembly. CBS News White House reporter Aaron Navarro joined us from D.C. on President Trump's health and the continuing U.S. military attacks on alleged drug boats in the Caribbean and the Eastern Pacific. And a former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso dropped by with his weekly update as well.
Boy, is this going to be fun. We are now in an election cycle. Everybody talking, of course, about the midterms, and that's great on the national scene. But statewide, we have a governor's race. Race for all the 36 seats in the state Senate, 151 in the state House. All the constitutional offices. I love this stuff. Joining us right now is a gentleman who has a little experience in that, former Republican State Senate member John McKinney of Fairfield. You can catch John and the other cohorts there 10:30 a.m. Sunday mornings on the TV version of the Capitol Report with our friends at WTNH News 8. Hey, John, it's Paul here. Happy New Year. Good afternoon. How are you?
Pap, I'm doing great, Paul. Happy New Year to you. And you had me reminiscing about my first minimum wage job there, so bringing back old times.
What were you doing? How much was it? What were you doing?
I was washing dishes at a restaurant in Fairfield just before my 16th birthday. Nice. I started at 15. My mother used to have to drive me and take me there, and I think I was making about $3.17 an hour. And I thought that was a lot.
And then you got your first check, and you saw federal withholding, you saw Medicare tax, you saw socials, and you're like, Mom, what is this? I thought I was making money here, right?
Well, I've got kids who are all in their 20s now, and when they got their first jobs, I said, and they asked me about all the taxes, I said, welcome to the Republican Party. Oh,
thank you, yeah. All right, John, speaking of that, boy, this is interesting now. You know, a lot of people kept telling Ned Lamont, hey, be careful about that third term, you know, the whole third term boogie, John, I guess he has kept the crazies at bay in his own party. He seems to like what he's doing, so I'm not all that shocked that he's running again, and his poll numbers are pretty good.
No, you're right. I know the governor quite well. I'm not surprised he's running again. He loves the job. We can debate issues, but I think overall his whole tone and manner for how he leads the state is very good. He obviously is focused the last, 7+ years on really getting our fiscal house in order, making sure we're paying down that crazy pension debt that we had accumulated for 40, 50 years. So I'm not surprised at all. He has a challenge right now, Paul, as you know, from a very progressive left state representative from Hamden named Josh Elliott. But I'm not convinced that Josh Elliott's going to follow through with the primary or even qualify for the primary. So I think Governor Lamont will sail, through the Democratic process. And then, it's up for the Republicans to see if they can mount the challenge. It's going to be formidable. His poll numbers are very good.
Yeah, let's talk about the Republicans. And obviously, you have former Mayor Erin Stewart of New Britain declared early, and she's kind of been in and out of this thing, John, for a few years. Ryan Fazio. I mean, you've got two really young, interesting, kind of fresh-looking personalities here, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's really good for the Republican Party. I don't care about your age. I care about, your vision and what you do. But having fresh faces, I think, given the fact that we have not won the governor's seat in so long, is good. I know both Aaron and Ryan very well. Aaron Stewart, as you sort of mentioned, did try to run for governor. She put her hat in the ring in 2018. She then jumped into the lieutenant governor's race then and lost in a primary to Joe Markley. Ryan Fazio is much newer to politics. He's had a business career and then has been in the state Senate for a few years. They're both very good. I think at this stage, neither of them, have a lot of name recognition. So there's a big challenge for them. I think Aaron has a little bit of a head start because she's done this before. She's been planning this campaign for a while. But Ryan is really, really smart, and he works really hard. So I think it's going to be, if it's just the two of them, a really interesting primary for the Republicans. Obviously, there's rumors that former New York Lieutenant Governor Betsy McCoy is interested in running. I'm hearing that she probably will, but I quite frankly, I know her. I like her. I hope she'll sit this out and and get behind either Aaron or Ryan and really help the party out.
You know, John, and the guest is John McKinney. Catch him Sundays 10:30 on the Capitol Report with our buddy Tom Dudchick on News 8. John, you know, one thing that we've seen happen, and frankly, it's frustrating for me. I've come out and said that numerous times, is a lot of times you will have a winner at the convention, especially on the Republican side. And then because legally challengers get enough support or they petition themselves onto a primary ballot, you know, some of the best laid plans get knocked aside. I always point to, you know, for example, Themis Claridis, Leora Levy, and also Mark Boughton. And eventual Governor Ned Lamont. Is there a rift, John McKinney, in the Republican Party? You know, as blue as Connecticut is, there's a very active, passionate Republican voter block out there. Is there a rift there where they say, oh, come on, this one, or he or she is just a rhino? You know, I can't do that. Do you see a problem out there or not?
I don't see a huge problem. Obviously, as you know, I ran in a primary against Tom Foley in 2014. I was one of those quote unquote rhinos that people used to say never won elections. But the reality is, you know, Paul, I always say pick the most conservative candidate who can win a general election. And I think what the rift in the Republican Party now is not so much a rhino versus conservative. It's the fact that there is a Trump voter out there that doesn't get enthusiastic or inspired about any candidate other than Donald Trump. And so we see some candidates trying to act like Donald Trump. And quite frankly, he's a one of one, right? Nobody else can do that. So we need a candidate who can reach out to the people who voted for Donald Trump, but really don't get enthusiastic about the party itself, to sort of join us to try to change what's happening here.
And to that, John McKinney, was interesting in that campaign kickoff video from Erin Stewart. Not only did she try to run away from Donald Trump or not try to run away from Donald Trump, it's in that video for a few seconds of her in the Oval Office with Donald Trump. So I don't know who her strategist is. You may know. I don't know. But she's embracing that, John. I mean, she's right up there and she's not running from it.
Well, I think, you know, you mentioned the Senate primary between Leora Levy and Themis Claridis. Themis won the Republican nomination. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump endorsed Leora Levy, and Leora Levy won. So I think, you know, Erin Stewart is probably calculating that to win the Republican primary, she needs to get those Trump voters, and she would probably like an endorsement from Donald Trump. I don't think he's going to endorse anyone in Connecticut. I don't think the White House even knows that Connecticut's on the map right now. But I think that's the problem. You know, Paul, look, regardless of what anybody in the Republican Party thinks of Donald Trump, you love him, you don't love him. The fact is he's been on the ballot in Connecticut and he hasn't won.
Yeah.
And so we have to present more than just Donald Trump in order to win, because that doesn't win in Connecticut. And we can argue that all day, but the facts are the facts.
Yeah. And John, finally, you were in the General Assembly for years. And John, I say this over and over again to people. The presidential race is sexy. The governor's race, the governor himself, he or she, it's sexy. But gosh darn it, the 36 men and women in the state Senate and the 151 men and women of the state House. John, I would posit to say that those men and women have more of an impact on your everyday life than maybe the actual governor does or the president. And I urge people to pay attention. And I'm saying that again in this cycle as well.
Paul, say it every day. Say it louder and louder every day. If people want to know how important it is to have more balance in the legislature, right now the Democrats have overwhelming majorities in the state Senate. It's a veto-proof majority. In 2018, the state Senate was 18 Republicans, 18 Democrats.
And look what happened.
The House had about, you're right, five or six more Democrats than Republicans, and we passed the best fiscal responsible reforms in the history of the state of Connecticut. And those reforms only happened because we had balance of Democrats and Republicans in the legislature. It wasn't overwhelmingly dominated by the Democrats. The Republicans forced the Democrats to do a spending cap, a bond cap, you know, a volatility cap. So we weren't continuing to spend and spend and spend. And that is such an important message. And it's tough, Paul. You need to get good candidates to run for the legislature. It's harder and harder to find people who want to do this because, you know, you're constantly attacked on social media. It takes a lot of time. And it's hard to beat incumbents. That's one of the things that I can tell you, regardless of what party you are. But we need to get good candidates, and we need to challenge them everywhere, not just the suburbs where we've won races, but we need to challenge them in places like Bridgeport, too. We may not win, but we need to challenge them.
Former Fairfield Republican State Senate member John McKinney. John, thanks. We'll be in touch down the road. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Take
care. Yep, John McKinney, former Fairfield State Senate member, and you see him every Sunday, 10:30, the TV version of the Capitol Report with our buddy Tom Dudchick and more on News 8. Joining us right now, though, is a gentleman who was with us for a lot of good stuff last year, starting off the year again with one of our favorite CBS News White House reporter Aaron Navarro to connect you to D.C. with a couple of things. Hey, Aaron, good afternoon. How are you? Happy New Year, my friend. How are you?
Happy New Year, Paul. Good to be with you.
Aaron, start at 2025 ended busy, and this one starts busy. I guess two of the things in D.C. you folks are covering. Number one, I found this a little interesting, the president opening up a little bit about all the rumors concerning his health. What's up with that?
Yeah, he spoke to the Wall Street Journal in a pretty notable interview that came out this week talking about his health. A condition that he has that requires him to wear compression socks, though he eventually admitted that he doesn't like wearing them, so he stopped. But there was also talk about the MRI scan that journalists started to learn about in October when he last went to Walter Reed Hospital. So the president talked a lot about that. But overall, just conveyed to the reporter that he believes he is in good health. That's what we heard from the White House. That's what we heard from the doctors that talked to the Wall Street Journal about this piece as they kind of try and get this topic of his health kind of under the rug, to put it in certain terms.
And I guess he kind of opened up, Aaron, from what I read and what I heard elsewhere, that, the doctor said, you probably should get a little more exercise. You know, you probably should sleep a little more. And apparently he likes to keep his blood thin. He enjoys taking aspirin. Did I read that right?
He said that, they say aspirin is good for thinning out the blood. And he said, quote, "I don't want thick blood pouring through my heart." But, you're right in the diet and the sleep schedule in this piece. And just what we know about President Trump is he rarely does sleep. He keeps his schedule pretty packed, despite being the oldest man to assume the presidency, at least going into this second term. And despite some of the images we sometimes see of him closing his eyes during cabinet meetings or longer Oval Office appearances. Mm-hmm. Though he says that, just closing his eyes helps him relax, but certainly it could be a topic that will follow him going into the rest of his term.
Yeah, and finally, Aaron Navarro, the White House, the War Department, the Pentagon, whatever, they show no inkling, do they, toward pulling back on attacking and blowing these alleged drug-running boats out of the water here, do they? And maybe they feel, they've got a winning issue here? Because we had just a couple of more, earlier this week?
Yeah, there were strikes against five more of these alleged drug smuggling boats on New Year's Eve that the U.S. military announced, and the total number of known boat strikes is 35, the number of people killed, 115. As you know, the White House, the Trump administration is continuing their pressure campaign to, get Nicolas Maduro, the president there, to step down. That's been something that President Trump wants and has wanted since his first term, but also oil and having a more of an American presence in Venezuelan oil. You've seen the White House, the administration, take actions to seize those oil tanks in terms of on ships. And also you've seen President Trump say that the U.S. should have more of a presence in the oil industry in Venezuela, and that they should, quote, return their assets to the U.S. So this will be a big story for this administration going into the new year.
Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Aaron, Happy New Year. Thanks. We'll talk down the road, I'm sure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Well, we turn the page, turn the corner to 2025 and 2026. We will maintain this feature here. We talk with our buddy, our pal, former Democratic state rep, longtime Bridgeport political fixture, Chris Caruso, every Friday at 5:15. Chris, happy to have you back. Happy Friday to you, and happy New Year. How are you?
A fixture rusting in place.
Yeah.
No. No, happy New Year, Paul, to you and your listeners. I'm doing well, thank you.
Good, good. Do you mind if I refer to you as a fixture in Bridgeport politics? Is that okay?
I'm only kidding. A fixture that's rusting, that's all. I'm only kidding.
Okay. Chris, I read something really interesting the other day, and a story that a few people are writing about that should be heralded more, and I'm sure some people are, the relatively, and one is too many, but the relative handful of murders, I mean, it was in the low single numbers, took place in Bridgeport last year. And I think all kudos need to go out to the police department, the chief.
Yep.
And you talk about a story that kind of snuck up on us. And that was just great. That was just great news to read the other day.
Yeah, you know, when I was in city government, Paul, years ago on the city council, it was not unheard of.
Yeah.
To have 60 or 70 murders a year. And in those days, the budget was very difficult. We were technically in bankruptcy, but, you know, couldn't create bankruptcy unless the state permitted us to go into bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And we had to borrow $35 million from the state. And we had an oversight or takeover, I should say, by the state in running the funds or the budget of the city of Bridgeport. And during that time, we looked at, you know, eliminating a shift for the police department.
Wow.
And then we were hearing that gangs, you know, caught wind of it. You know, it was going to be the night shift, and so we couldn't do that. We were looking at closing firehouses, the Veterans Affairs Office, you name it. Everything was on the chopping block. In the middle of all of that, Paul, we had 60, 70 murders happening in the city.
Yeah.
You know, crime was crazy, out of control. And this is exciting in the sense of being a Bridgeport resident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having lived through the bad times, things are getting better. In 50 years, this is the lowest murder rate in the city, but not only murder, other crime as well, which is a testament to the police chief, who I think he's done a lot of good for the city. And as well, I'd be remiss if I didn't recognize the police officers.
Sure.
That, you know, added to the reduction in crime as well. Now, there are naysayers out there who will say, well, you know, the crime is still, of course, there's always going to be crime, and we still have a lot more work to do. But I think it bodes well that we're moving in the right direction. And that's critically important. Areas that we still need to work on is the erratic driving that's happening. We've seen pedestrians being hit and some killed because of the erratic driving. Just recently on Lindley Street, a vehicle went into one of the commercial buildings there. And, you know, we've seen those. That's probably one area under quality of life that needs to be worked on. But at least we're moving in the right direction, and that's critical. And it's not only the police department. It's the nonprofit organizations that work with offenders that come out of prison and help them get back on the right track and not repeat the crime. So I think it's a combination of things. But it's very exciting, Paul, as a Bridgeport resident, long-time Bridgeport resident, to see games like this. And in turn, I give kudos to the police chief, to the police department, to the nonprofits, all working together to make a better Bridgeport. And, you know, with safety comes a lot of good things. Our school systems, people look at our schools and say, hey, I'm not a problem having my kids go to those programs, or living in neighborhoods, or economic development. It all has a positive impact. Yep, and you're right, it did catch up on us. I didn't expect it, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and Chris, I always used to have this discussion. We had a good-natured, you know, kind of a verbal joust on this with John DeStefano, the mayor of New Haven, years ago when I was doing a show in New Haven. And I would say, and he would kind of agree with me, but, you know, we all know John. We like him. I would say, Mayor, nothing else happens unless you have public safety. If there's safety, businesses feel better. People feel better. People will go down. Yep. They will spend their money. To me, Chris, I don't know what your feelings are, but if you're building a structure of a society or a city, that foundation, that rock-hard foundation, has to be the assurance of public safety, whether it's for the lowest-income person there selling fruit on the street corner or some multimillionaire that lives by the sea.
Yeah, no, Paul, you're 100% right. It's one of the foundations, if you will, of a community. Safety, public safety has to be. It's just, it's so critical. You know, why do people come into Bridgeport to the amphitheater, the arena? It's because we have a police presence. People feel comfortable. They feel safe, park their vehicle. It's well lighted. They go to area restaurants and they leave with a good impression of Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. And the people who live here deserve the same protection. You're absolutely right. Whether it's a person selling fruit on the street corner or a small store, they deserve that too, and the resident deserves it. So public safety is fundamental to many things. And, you know, it's interesting, but this police chief is using more technology to deal with crime. And before the city council on Monday night will be a drone program where drones could be actually used in preventing crime. So, you know, he's ahead of the curve. He's really trying to involve the community. Mm-hmm. He does community outreach. We've done now police academies where citizens can go learn about, you know, police procedure, what's happening, so they have a better understanding. There's been a lot of neighborhood forums to bring the public into it. He's targeted areas of the city where the crime rates were high and focused police attention. The city's hired now, I think it's 100 new officers, and another group is going to be graduating in January. So we're building up the number, but they're being used wisely, Paul, and it's a credit to the city. And, you know, Bridgeport always takes knocks, you know that.
But
let's see people say something good about this, because, is there crime still? Of course there
of
is.
Course.
That's in any community. But this is a big step after 50 years to say it's the lowest rate of murder. It says something. And not only murder, but robberies and other crimes as well. It's good. It bodes well.
Yeah, and maybe too, Chris, there's an attitudinal change in generations that helps too. Hey, Chris, real quick, in about the 2 minutes we have left, you're a longtime Democrat. You're on the progressive side of some things. Other ways, you know, you're right down the middle. Listen, the Republican Party has done its reboot now for 10 years with Donald Trump. We look down the street and we see Zohran Mamdani, the mayor who was installed this week. He said, I am a proud Democratic socialist. In about 2 minutes here, where do you put where the Democratic Party is, Chris, tapping in on all your vast experience here. Is Mamdani an aberration? Is he where the party is going? Is he just part of the party? When you look and hear him and see what he claims to want to do, most of which he can't, what are your thoughts?
You know, Paul, I still think the Democratic Party is still down the middle. I think it's moderate. So I think there's, you know, those in the progressive side that are trying to advance more programs or policies.
Yeah.
The party still, for the most part, people are looking more moderately. Mm-hmm. You know, there are times in social programs where the party will lean more to the left and be supportive of people, human rights, health care, issues like that.
Yeah.
But in other areas, they're still moderate. And I think Connecticut is a prime example of that.
Yeah.
I think if the party goes too far to the left, I think you lose support. If it goes too far to the right, you lose support, and it's really in the middle. You know, New York is a unique city. It really is. It's multicultural, multiracial, multifaceted, multi-challenges, multi-successes.
Multi-multi.
No, that's right. And it's not the first time that New York has had a progressive mayor.
Yeah.
You know, LaGuardia was a progressive when you think about it, right? FDR, who was in New York State as the governor, was very progressive. It's not the first time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think candidates sometime overpromise, and we're going to see exactly what Mamdani can do. You know, there's been a lot of criticism on Facebook. You know, he should resign, he should do this. you know, give the guy a chance.
I know, give him a chance.
Give him a chance. There's going to be enough time to throw darts at him and you know, do voodoo dolls and everything else with the guy. You know, give him a chance. If he succeeds in some areas like universal health care, that's what we're trying to do in Connecticut, because without, you know, the support of child care, people can't go to work. Yeah. And in turn, they're limited on what they can do. So give them a chance. Let's see what comes of it, you know?
Yeah, common sense. Chris Caruso. Yeah. Chris, always great to have you, and
you
happy 2026. And we'll chat next week, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
All right,
now.
Chris Caruso there, longtime fixture in Bridgeport politics, former city council member, former Democratic state rep. Yeah, I mean, listen, let's see what Mom Donnie does.